the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and today I think we would like to do something different. We might say, well, now we digress. I mean, a lot of times here on the program, we talk technical on the show. I mean, things that you should be doing running up to retirement, just before retirement, and during retirement. And I'm a big fan of checklists. Checklists take away the necessity of thinking through certain things. It's based on having thought about it ahead of time. I know, like in flying, all right, if you're in a real busy airport and things are a little messy, you don't have time to always pull out the checklist and say, okay, read me point number one here. Okay, check. Read me point number two. Check. You know, that type of thing.
Do you ever find yourself doing that, though, John, when you travel? I have found it's almost like a must, because you know when you get to the airport, or if you're taking a road trip, you're halfway there to your destination. You leave and you forget to take your phone charger or your iPad charger with you. That's a common one that I've done a number of times. So I find myself going to an electronic store or an Apple store to get a charger so my phone doesn't go dead.
Well, since we travel a lot, in line with what we're talking about today, I have a list on my computer, a file, and before I get ready to travel, I pull it up and print it out. And it's based on all the previous times we've left, and it's everything I need to do, including the charger for your little phone or for your pad and everything else. And just as we're going out the door, the last thing I do is double check the list. And I don't have to think about it in the course of what will I need, because I did that already. And then I make changes to it from time to time as circumstances change. But the idea of some kind of a checklist is really worthwhile. So when you're getting ready to retirement, here you are, you're getting ready to land the airplane. Don't want to land it with the landing gear up. That's not very good for the airplane, not to mention for the pilot's ego. And so how do you do that with your retirement? So what we'd like to do today is a pre-op on retirement. You're getting ready to do it. Now, we've told you everything you should do pre, at the moment, and even during retirement. But how do you run down a checklist and make sure, doggone it, you just haven't forgotten anything? And that's because you have done some pre-op work here.
Yeah, I think the best way, John, to illustrate this is to go through a recent case study at our office, because it'll sort of put this in perspective. Yeah, we could come up in this show in 5 minutes and say, you do this, you do this, you do this, and do this. But I think a real life case study will show you some of the examples of things you should do, but it'll illustrate how sometimes by going through this pre-op, it often changes the outcome of the actual retirement itself. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to take you through sort of this pre-op. And this is an individual that's getting ready to retire. He's been a client of ours, him and his wife, for 10 years. And his wife is going to be retiring next year, but he's thinking of retiring in the next 4 to 5 years. And this week's case is going to be about Bob and Kathy Shelton. And just to give you a little background, Bob works for a large pharmaceutical department. He's in sales. Kathy, his wife, teaches high school. She teaches science. And next summer, she will have 30 years with the school district. And here in California, 30 years with the school district is sort of the magic number where you really get a nice pension plan. So there were two things that we were looking at. One is Kathy's retirement next year. And then two, Bob, at what time does he retire? And so they wanted to sort of get a checklist and say, all right, my wife wants to retire next year. This makes sense. And let's talk about it. And we need to talk about my own retirement, because I'm not ready to sit down and actually retire. And when would be the best retirement age? Because there's a number of decisions that we're going to go through here that he's going to have to make, and it's also going to alter their actual retirement itself.
Well, it would seem like here you're going to have some kind of conflict that works into this, because one spouse would seem to be retiring while the other is working full time. I mean, when you're retired and you say, next week we're going to go see the grandkids in Phoenix or something like that, you can't quite do that if the other's working full time. Unless, of course, he works for himself and he just tells the staff, I'll be back. So it would seem like you've got to deal with this in a little different way.
You really do. But I mean, there are a lot of things that they do together, and Bob has enough seniority with the company that he gets 4 weeks vacation out of the year, so there's a month. So if they want to go, let's say, take a trip to Europe for 2 weeks or something, he has enough vacation time. But Kathy also has her own personal hobby, which is photography. So certainly she has enough things to keep herself busy, plus the fact that she's probably going to end up becoming a better golfer than Bob because they both play golf as well. So between playing golf and between her hobbies of photography, there's a lot of things that she can do until Bob retires. And we're going to take you through this kind of decision on how pre-op can often influence actually what happens in retirement. Now, Bob had a account with us that was worth roughly about $1.2 million. It was a rollover from a 401k plan from his previous employer. And we're going to talk about how this could potentially set up a major tax problem down the road, because especially depending on what his decision would be to retire. But the first issue that we had to deal with was Kathy's own retirement, and she plans on retiring at the end of the school year, which would be June of next year, when the school year she would have 30 years in with the school district. She would get roughly about 66% of her salary as a pension. And so that's going to be the ideal time in terms of actually retiring. So we went through that and we said, you know, that is a good decision to make. You know, there isn't too much more of a benefit that you're going to get. And quite honestly, she was tired of teaching and she kind of wanted to get on with sort of semi-retirement with golf and also doing some other things with her hobby of photography. So the first decision that was made is to go through with the retirement at June. And June of next year, her retirement would be $5,221 a month. That would be a total income per year of $62,652. Now, Bob, on the other hand, wanted to continue to work. And the real question would be, does he retire at age 65, 66, and 67?
Now, Jim, there are a lot of rules, though, as I understand it, that go in with that. Social Security, for example, it's affected by that.
Well, that's one of the key things we had to look at, because Bob is of that age. His full retirement benefits would not be reached to age 66 and 4 months. And then the other thing that we had to take a look at, would he be better taking his Social Security at age 66 and 4 months, or would he be better off waiting to age 70. Now, Kathy, because she was a teacher, they didn't pay into the Social Security system, so she wouldn't get any Social Security. However, should Bob predecease her, she would be eligible for Bob's Social Security. So this is going to be a key thing. And so what we did is, prior to them coming into the meeting, I said there are a couple things that you need to do in advance. Number one, take a look at what your Social Security benefits would be at full Social Security age at 66 and 4 months, or what would it be at age 70? Number two, prepare a retirement budget. In other words, if you were both retired, what is your budget going to look like? What are the expenses going to be when you retire versus with both of you working? Because your budget's going to change. Your fixed budget may change a little bit. Your variable budget, which, you know, as you get more involved in hobbies and travel, that's going to change. The other thing that we wanted him to do is bring in a copy of his benefit package at work, because he had a 401k program where they matched up to 3% of his salary. He also had a deferred compensation program that the company offered, because each year, depending on the company's goals and objectives, he could get a year-end bonus that would sometimes range anywhere from $30,000 in a bad year to as high as $60,000 in a good year. So depending on what the company goals and his department goals were. So we also wanted to take a look at his benefit package, and then also his current 401k plan, its allocation, and then also his deferred compensation plan, because these were going to be the key questions that we were going to have to look at in terms of when he should retire and how he should structure his retirement benefit.
Well, Social Security, of course, is a subject of frequent conversation here on the program. The big issue is when you should take it. Some take it early, and they tend to shortchange themselves. And in this case, it would seem like Bob is the only one who's going to get it for now.
Well, Bob would be the only one that'd be eligible because school teachers don't pay in the system. And when he brought in his benefits from Social Security at age 66 and 4 months, his Social Security benefit would be roughly $2,900 a month. However, that would rise to $3,758 at age 70. So it would go up substantially. So the real key question here is, would he need to take his Social Security at age 66 in order to meet his monthly retirement benefit? Now, the other thing he did is when he brought in his current statement, he had $954,000 between two programs at the company. He had $729,000 in his 401k program, and he had $225,000 in his deferred compensation program. And that was going to be real key because the thing is, if he continues to work every single year, he always gets a bonus. It's just a matter of how big that bonus is. Like I said, on a bad year, it's maybe $30,000. On a good year, it's probably twice that, which is $60,000. Now, what Bob had been doing to keep his taxes down to a minimum, he had been rolling that money instead of taking the money as a bonus at the end of the year and ending up paying a big chunk in taxes, he would have it deferred in his deferred compensation program. And we had talked about early on that this was a good idea because it would set us up for all kinds of options when it came time to retirement. So based on this fact, we sort of did an average of between $30,000 and $60,000. We came up with about a $40,000 contribution because they did want to take some trips to Europe. And so they wanted to use some of the money he got as a bonus to pay for those vacations. So we were figuring we were going to contribute between $30,000 and $40,000 a year into deferred comp. And so by the time he would get close to retirement, that would be anywhere from $300,000 to $350,000. Now, what we did is we took a look at, and this is so key, folks, and I can't stress this enough, of having a budget. Because a budget, that's where the real story is. Will you have enough income to support that lifestyle and any excess throughout retirement? And their basic budget was $108,000. So we took a look at it and we did some math and we loaded it into our software program. And we said, look, at age 65, you will have approximately $300,000 in your deferred compensation program. So they have an option whether you can take that money out over a 5-year period or 10-year period. So I said it would make sense to take that money out over a 5-year period and would do two things. Number one, over a 5-year period, that would amount to $60,000 of income. Kathy's pension of roughly $62,600 would amount to $122,600, which would be well above their base budget of $108,000. So we looked at that and we said, you know, the best option we think is you can afford to retire at age 65, in other words, 16 months prior to full retirement age, because you're not going to need your Social Security. Number two, given the fact that between your deferred comp and the pension your wife was getting, there would be no need to take that Social Security. So we decided that the best election would be is to just leave Social Security to accumulate to age 70, at which point it would go from $2,900 a month to almost $3,800 a month, which would leave more money for Kathy, even though they were both the same age. Women tend to outlive their husbands. And so we elected two options here. Number one, we set a retirement age of 65. Number two, we set an option that we were going to take a deferred compensation program, take his deferred comp over a 5-year period. Number three, we were going to defer his Social Security benefits and allow it to grow at 8% a year until age 70.
Okay, what were some of the other options here? Because, you know, if I look at this overall, based on what you're describing here for them, it sounds like they were in good shape based on their pensions. I mean, he had $700,000 in a 401k. and $1.2 million in an IRA rollover. But at age 70, isn't that going to be a problem when he starts to take Social Security? Because there are some impacts on, among other things, the whole tax situation.
Well, yeah, because at age 70, we were estimating that his combined IRAs, assuming that he was going to roll the 401k program into the IRA when he retired, would be anywhere between $2.5 to $3 million, which would mean at age 70, he would be required to take between $70,000 and $90,000 a year, and that would be ordinary income. And remember, John, every year you age, that number gets bigger. You have to take out more and more of that retirement as you get. I have clients in their 90s that are taking out over 10% of their IRAs because of the ages. So that would become a tax problem. And so basically what we figured is that that IRA in his combined pension would be somewhere between $2.5 and $3 million at the time he retires. And at age 70 and a half, the income coming out would be $70,000 to $90,000. He'd be in a permanent high tax bracket. And that was something we wanted to avoid because, you know, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 of additional income going up each year would put him in a very, very high tax bracket. So based on our retirement pre-op, the other thing that we also took a look at is we ran a risk analysis on his pension at work. And we said, look, you are less than 4 years away from retiring because his personal IRA with us was in a very conservative role because of the fact that he could be retiring in the next couple of years and the fact that he had notified us that his wife, Kathy, would be retiring next year. So the one thing we did is we had him change his 401k allocation. He was using target funds of the year 2025 in the year 2030. And I said, look, we know that the Fed is raising interest rates and we know that this business cycle is getting long in the tooth and we're more likely to go through a recession and bear market over the next couple of years. Now, you know, going back 9 years ago, he was 15, 20 years away from retirement. And even though the account went down during the downturn, it did not go down as much because it was invested defensively. You don't want to start out your retirement going through a major bear market like we had in 2008 and 2009. So we said, look, we want you to shorten and make your portfolio a lot more secure. Just like a couple of years ago, we changed him from a growth portfolio, which is what it was when he started with us over a decade ago, and more towards a balanced portfolio that had bonds and stocks. So we made the portfolio more conservative. What we are doing now is he needed to change and do the same thing at work.
So based on an analysis of his situation, instead of retiring, say, at 67 or 68, it made sense to retire at age 65. Number two, since he had deferred compensations, it made sense very clearly not to touch his Social Security because that would put him into a higher tax bracket, at least it could. And it would also, if you left it alone, would grow to a higher benefit for Kathy should Bob predecease her. Now, any other options here?
Yeah, two other things that we took a look at, we sort of did a preliminary tax estimate of what their tax bracket would look like when they retired, when Bob retired at age 65. So we took a look at that. And one of the things that we wanted to do is minimize the long-term tax problems that he would have with the sizable IRA. And so what we did is we felt that we could take $100,000 a year out of his IRA and convert it into a Roth without bumping him up into a higher tax bracket. In other words, he would be in a similar tax bracket to what he is today with him and his wife working. That was one option that we want to do. We want to take out $100,000 a year over a 5-year period, or roughly $500,000, and put it into a Roth where the income would be tax-free. So we wouldn't have to worry about additional tax income. A second thing that we wanted to do, because we told him, I said, look, we're more than likely going to have a bear market and recession here. You know, I don't know if it comes 2018, 2019, when it comes, but we're going to have another one. And what we like to do is have a client have 1 year's worth of living expenses in a bank account that they can draw down on cash, so they don't have to draw down assets or liquidate assets in a bear market. So we wanted to build his cash reserve because he only had roughly about $30,000 in cash, and we felt that that was not enough. And the other thing is they had a home in which they had roughly, I think it was close to $190,000 in a mortgage. And they also had a second vacation home that was a couple hundred thousand. And they said, you know, they weren't quite sure if they were going to keep the vacation home long term in retirement. But what we also suggested is with their excess savings, they do two things: pay down the mortgage and eventually get rid of the mortgage. And then also build up their cash savings account so they have a large cash reserve that would give them the wherewithal to ride out a bear market in the stock market. And then finally, we were going to update their estate plan, especially on distributions from IRAs. We were going to change that, especially with the sizable IRA once he rolls over his 401k. So we were going to also make an update to the estate plan when he retired.
So to go back through the Jim Poplava checklist at the end of our conversation here, just before we go into our real life case study. Number one, know your Social Security benefits. You can get the benefits, an outline of them and everything from the Social Security Administration. Get a statement that shows your benefits at age 62, 66, and 70. Number two, get a copy of your company benefits and study and know your options with those, whatever kind of plans they have. Number three, this one isn't really too hard if you've been doing it all along, but prepare a budget in terms of what you're spending money on now, how much is coming in, how much is going out, and what it will look like in contrast with that when you retire. That's really important. That's your framework of reference, and it doesn't mean it's always the same. It'll change, but do it ahead of time so you have an idea. It doesn't look so daunting to you. You know exactly what's going to come in and what will probably be going out. Now, know where you plan to live. This is number four. Where you plan to live in retirement is really important because some places are just darn expensive to live. And it's better to live in other nice places where it doesn't cost quite as much. Number five, begin to study and understand your Medicare options. And remember to get signed up for that promptly around your 65th birthday. You've got a six-month window there to do that. You need to do that. Whether you begin using them or not is immaterial. Number six, look at long-term life care insurance if you are in your 50s. And number seven, remember to change and modify your investments to be more conservative. The closer you get to retirement, you're looking to having them produce income for you rather than just rolling investments forward. So that's the checklist if you are thinking about retiring at any time in the next 200 years or so. Meaning, if you're starting out, you should be thinking about these things. And if you're getting close to retirement, you should be getting ready to do the checklist. Okay, let's go on to what we call our real life case study. Now, remember, this is an hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed. And on our website at financialsense.com, we do have slides, presentation slides, which illustrate the points that Jim is making here. So I'm assuming we have a couple again, am I right?
You guessed it. This week's case study is Marty and Taylor Nunez. Marty is age 57. Taylor is age 55. Both wish to retire soon. Looking at their investment risk tolerance, they were moderately conservative, as happens to most people the closer you get to retirement. So a little color and background. Marty was involved in corporate finance. He's managed their finances up to this point. He subscribes to many newsletters and watches many shows regarding the markets to keep himself informed. Now, he typically has been a buy and hold investor and is focused on the energy sector given his knowledge and work experience in that industry. Traditionally, he invests in stocks and commodities, had very, very little exposure to bonds. Marty would like to retire, and he came to us seeking advice how to best prepare for that retirement. Taylor was a massage therapist. She's excited about the prospect of retiring, and she would like to see a professional to get clarity on their retirement outlook. In other words, what does it look like over the next 20, 30 years? They've never kept a budget since they had dual incomes, and they would like to maintain the same comfortable lifestyle, which is pretty much an objective that most people have heading into retirement. Now, we looked at their risk score. They scored 3 on a scale of 1 to 10. However, their portfolio risk was a 7, especially with a large concentration in metals. What was important to both of them was to be able to retire. They wanted to keep their taxes to a minimum, maintain the same lifestyle, but more importantly, avoid investment losses. They took quite a bit of loss, basically Marty did, in precious metals. Now, we had them do a budget. Their essential budget was about $72,000. Discretionary spending, which was hobbies and vacation, was $38,000. That came to $110,000. Marty's salary was $112,000. Taylor's salary was $52,000. So they roughly had about a $54,000 surplus. Now, we had them take a look at what would be different in retirement. Essential budget would drop by $12,000 to $60,000. Discretionary would drop from $38,000 to $25,000. So get down to about $85,000. Social Security between the two of them would be $58,000 at full retirement age, a shortfall of about $28,000. Now, let's take a look at their balance sheet. Their primary residence was $470,000. Other real estate holdings were about $100,000. Marty's retirement plan was a little over $700,000. Taylor's retirement plan, her IRA, was roughly about $45,000. They had about $220,000 in cash. And here's the big problem, $416,000 in precious metals at one time that was worth close to almost twice that. Stock options at his company were worth about $98,000. So overall, total investments were about almost $1.1 million. Total assets about $1.8 million. Liabilities were about $103,000. Now, let's take a look at Marty's assets before his financial plan. He had 24% of his portfolio in commodities. That was all gold. 34% in real estate. He had 4% in bonds and 37% in stocks, none, hardly any, in cash. He had very concentrated stock positions. There was no budget, no diversification of assets, and insufficient retirement savings. What we did is we created a balanced portfolio for him because we said, look, you know, you've been through cycles before. You saw what happened in 2008. You saw what happened in 2000. And here you are heading into retirement. The last thing you want to do is see that $1 million drop to $500,000, like what happened to your gold portfolio, which at one time was worth $800,000. So we put together a fixed income and a dividend stock portfolio with a yield of about 2.8%. That yielded $33,000. So their total income would be a little over $91,000, leaving them a surplus of about $6,000 a year. Now, we encourage Marty to reduce his concentrated stock positions by exercising his stock options and selling portions of the company's stock held inside his 401k. There was just way too much in one company's stock, and this was a high flyer. He also recommended that he eliminate all exposure to the energy sector inside his taxable accounts. He was way, way overinvested in the commodity sector. We also worked with him to develop a budget and put a system in place so Marty and Taylor could monitor their spending, kind of get a feel like, hey, this is how much we're spending on a regular basis. This is where it goes. This allows them to develop a more realistic spending pattern heading into retirement. Marty and Taylor reallocated their investment to include exposure to bonds and other missing asset classes, which would dramatically reduce the volatility in the account. We recommended that also they increase their savings to each one of their 401ks, especially to help them lower their taxes, and especially since they were about 5-6 years away from retirement.
So once again, I mean, this is pretty much the theme that we tend to thump here on Lifetime Income, and that is we're talking about the steps you need to do to prepare for retirement, knowing your Social Security benefits, your company benefits, doing a budget, know where you plan to live, understand not only Social Security but Medicare. If you can earlier on, look at long-term care insurance if you're in your 50s, but mostly and above all, make your investments conservative. You got to get them conservatively aligned to protect yourself in the event of the fact that we have another market downturn like we had before. You don't need that when you're in the process of being retired. Coming up tomorrow on the program is Dan Buettner, The Blue Zones. Sounds almost like a spy novel or something apocalyptic, but it's about five regions in the world where we see a lot of people who are centenarians. And the question is, why are there lots of people who are 100 plus years? What is it they do there that people in other parts of the world don't do? And if it works for you, you may want to start imitating that for greater and better longevity and better quality into your later years, quality of life. Okay, Jim, anything coming up in the weeks to come?
We'll be concentrating a little bit more on risk, increasing income during retirement, and various income options, and basically more rounded strategies. The thing that really concerns me, John, is we're getting late in this business cycle, so some point either later this year or the first part of next year, as the Fed continues to raise interest rates, we are going to get into a higher risk environment, especially if you listen to the weekend program. And we want people to be prepared because there are a lot of people that are getting ready to retire. And gosh, if you're a boomer, do you really want to go through another third bear market unprepared? Highly recommend that's not what you want to do. So we'll be talking more about that in the future. In the meantime, we're out of time. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.